The following is a paid program sponsored by CDN Instructional Services. The views expressed on the program are solely those of the sponsor. CFund does not endorse the views expressed or the goods or services promoted on the program. This is Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFund, 1410 AM.
Good afternoon. I'm Candace Newton, and this is Unlocking Secrets for Women here on 1410 AM CFund, the show that educates and assists women with issues they could face every day. We've got two segments happening today. In the first segment, we're going to talk about solutions for varicose veins. We're pleased to have Dr. Jack Pacey from False Creek Surgical with us for our first segment, and Susan Rafter, Vice President of Relations for False Creek Surgical. In segment two, we're going to talk about teen pregnancy with Marian Christian of Stepping Stones, an organization that assists pregnant teens. We also want you to join us after the show today at 3:45 at www.unlockingsecrets.com for our Sunday after the show chat. The experts and myself will be there to talk with you. So welcome, Dr. Pacey, to Unlocking Secrets for Women.
Thank you.
And Susan, it's nice to have you here again.
Hi, Candace. Thank you.
Varicose veins are actually a common problem affecting more than 24 million women and men in North America. Traditionally, removing them has been a painful procedure, but there's now a more advanced, high-tech, and effective treatment to remove varicose veins. So, Dr. Jack Pacey, you're a board-certified vascular and general surgeon and member of False Creek Surgical Center. And you're one of the few area physicians performing the Trivex transilluminated powered phlebectomy to treat varicose veins. Phlebectomy is a medical term for vein removal. So why don't we start off by explaining what are varicose veins, Dr. Pacey?
Well, Candace, varicose veins are dilated blood vessels, usually in the legs, that are unsightly and cause inflammation, ulceration. Normally, veins carry the blood back to the heart, but the veins have valves in them, which, when they're damaged or when they're not present because of congenital factors, i.e. family history, then the valves fail to properly conduct the blood back to the heart, and the veins start dilating. The pressures build up on the veins, and you get an unsightly condition.
And they're very unattractive. You've seen them on people's legs. I've seen them on the legs of pregnant women and girls have had babies. So it's not necessarily an age-even related issue. So can you tell me, now we know they're considered unattractive, but are they a health threat?
Well, they can be. Veins can lead to ulceration, pain, and at times, swelling of the ankles, especially later on after the problems developed for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then what about Trivex? What is this Trivex method of vein removal? Can you explain that?
Well, Trivex is an excellent system for vein removal. It's really an outstanding procedure. It is taken from arthroscopic surgery, where devices were developed to remove tissue. And this has been applied to varicose vein surgery. It started in the United States in July of 2000, and False Creek Surgical Center has acquired this capability. It's a patented system, and essentially it uses a light behind the veins, which is brought in through a small port to backlight the veins and allow the operating equipment to effectively remove the veins. So you can see veins that normally are hidden, and you can see veins that are quite large, perhaps under the skin and disguised by a little bit of fatty tissue. So when these veins are removed, the problem is really completely removed. And this is confirmed by the transillumination, the light system.
So the vein, just for someone like myself who's not a physician, the veins actually completely taken out?
The veins are completely removed.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so then how does the blood supply, then what happens to the blood supply to that limb or that area if we're removing a vein? Well,
these are diseased veins. They're not really normal. And the fact that they're enlarged means they're not working properly.
Okay.
So the blood is actually backing up in these veins and causing them to dilate and get much larger and more unsightly.
So will the body sort of create a new access for that blood source, or how does it get back down there? If the vein's diseased,
yeah,
then what happens when you pull that out?
There are many, many veins in the legs, and we're probably at worst only taking out 5 or 10%.
Oh, wow.
So, there's plenty of extra channels.
Yeah. And that's good. That's good to know. I didn't know that. And so this new system that you've got and developed, why is this better than some of the traditional methods maybe of treating varicose veins?
Well, for a start, there are very small incisions used, and the procedure is free of pain. There's very little pain associated with the procedure, and it's very effective. It's much more effective than traditional methods of vein removal, and this is because it's guided by the light factor.
So can you explain for those that are listening what has been the traditional vein removal, like what it involves from a layperson's point of view?
Well, the traditional methods, the main method was in many years ago, was stripping of varicose veins, which we still sometimes do in certain instances, but nowhere near as often as we used to. That was a relatively painful operation, required hospitalization, and there was a lot of morbidity with that. People didn't really like that.
And what exactly is stripping?
Well, stripping is cutting into the vein above and below the at the ankle and also at the groin, and placing a steel wire through the entire length of the vein, and then literally tearing the vein out.
Ouch!
Its whole length, which, as you can imagine, is quite an insult to the body.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's injections of varicose veins, and these are useful. They're very good in selected circumstances, but we're tending a little more towards vein removal these days because of sometimes you can get a little bit of staining from injection of varicose veins. So we do both, but we are careful about selecting which ones we remove and which ones we inject.
So now, as a surgeon and being involved with Falls Creek Surgical, which they have a desire for excellence in everything that they do, which is why they put out the money to purchase this expensive equipment to enable you to do this procedure, can you tell me from a surgeon's point of view, do you appreciate that equipment better? How does that make it easier for you?
Well, the equipment is otherwise unavailable in British Columbia, so from our point of view, that's an excellent.
So you're the only one that has this equipment.
That's correct.
That's excellent. Yeah. That is really good to know that. And so for you, is it a quicker procedure for the patient now? Is it a faster procedure, or the recovery faster, or what are the
what's called a minimally invasive operation these days, and the recovery is quicker, and the operation is easier because it's clearly illuminated by the lighting system, and it's easier to get a good result. So it's better for the surgeon as well as for the patient.
Oh, yeah. And now, are these patients under general anesthetic or local anesthetic?
This has to be done under general anesthetic. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, that's very interesting. I just wanted to just talk a little bit more about there are some procedures that Falls Creek Surgical won't do because it's very important to them to maintain and have the very best procedures available to patients. Can you talk to us a little bit about a procedure that you do not do at Falls Creek Surgical, but it may be done in other places, and why it's not done?
I guess you're referring to laser vein treatment.
Yes.
And the laser vein treatment is an interesting technique. It has a checkered history. Some of the results have been very good, and some of the results have been not as good. And Falls Creek's decision on this was to just go with the procedures that they were more comfortable with, and they were happier with the results on.
A more superior method of dealing with them.
Well, for the type of veins we're doing, it is better.
And so the results are more lasting, they're longer lasting.
More predictable and more assured.
Oh, that's very good. It's excellent. That just gives us more confidence in knowing that there's a surgical center out there that has that excellence, that's wanting to only do what they believe is the very best for their patients, to offer them those things. Because I guess if it was just all about money, you'd be offering everything. But it's actually your standards that are, you're upholding your standards. When we come back, we're going to talk again a little bit more about False Creek Surgical and a little bit about varicose veins. And that is Unlocking Secrets here with Candace Newton on 1410 CFUN AM.
You're listening to Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN 1410 AM. We now return to Unlocking Secrets for Women, a program paid for and sponsored by CDN Instructional Services. Now, back to Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN 1410 AM.
We're back, and this is Candace Newton and Unlocking Secrets for Women here on 1410 CFUN. We're talking with Dr. Jack Pacey, a vascular surgeon, board certified from False Creek Surgical Center, and Susan Rafter, Vice President of Relations, False Creek Surgical Center. And we want to talk about sclerotherapy, which we did a little bit, Dr. Pacey, but we didn't actually say what the procedure itself was. So do you want to just recap for us what that procedure is again?
Sure. Sclerotherapy is the manual injection of varicose veins with a sclerosant chemical. And this causes the blood to clot in the veins. It destroys the veins, and it's a proven method of managing varicose veins. It's quite effective, but it does from time to time leave a little bit of scarring.
Oh, it does.
The scarring in the form of a bruise, which generally goes away over a period of time. It gradually diminishes, and sometimes a bit of the bruising can persist. And this is one of the disadvantages, the main disadvantage of that procedure.
Cosmetically, it's not attractive.
It's not as attractive as other methods.
Okay. And so then, therefore, which is the reason why you guys feel that the Trivex method is superior?
I think the experience of the last few years has proven that removal of veins is more effective from a therapeutic point of view, mm-hmm. for treating the pain and discomfort and heaviness in the legs. But it's also more effective for the cosmetic results, because the bruising is not a factor. And so we get a more effective, more complete removal of the veins and
better outcome.
The better outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, that's important because varicose veins are visual. You can see them. And not only are they a health problem like we were talking about, but they are very visual and unpleasant looking. And so it's perfect if we can take care of the procedure with a superior method and leave a nice cosmetic result at the same time. That's ideal.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Right. And Trivex is a perfect method to do that.
And that can be achieved. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's very good that False Creek Surgical Center has that procedure and available to their patients for that. So, Dr. Pacey, it's been great having you here to discuss varicose veins options. And for more information on varicose vein procedures, you need to check out the fabulous website for False Creek Surgical Center, which is www.falsecreeksurgicalcenter.com. Or book a consultation by calling 604-484-CONSULT, which is 604-484-2667, or toll-free at 1-800-815-9338. Now, if you miss that information, you can go to my website, www.unlockingsecrets.com, and there's a link to False Creek Surgical Center there, and you can access the information directly that way too. Now, False Creek Surgical Center is also coming up to talk to us again in the next few weeks about more women's health issues. Susan, would you like to quickly give us some details regarding the upcoming topics?
Sure, Candace. Some of the topics that we're looking at covering over the next few shows are stress urinary incontinence solutions for women, and there's actually a technique that False Creek Surgical Center will be the first center offering it. That is a non-surgical procedure for women.
Oh,
and
I'm
so excited to be able to come on your show and to talk about that later with one of our physicians that is going to be doing that procedure. So that's going to be really exciting.
And I'm excited to hear it because I have you know, tampered with that problem every once in a while. So I really want to hear.
As have many of us.
Yeah. That's excellent.
So that's going to be great. That's just a little tidbit for you, and we will get into a show on that particular topic. There's other topics that we'll be talking about as well, and one of the topics I know you and I have talked about a little bit personally as well is just what happens to a woman's body after childbirth,
mm-hmm.
and how we love our children, but they can do really bad things to our bodies.
Yeah.
So we
it looks like we've been hit by a Mack truck and had gravity sucking you down from the legs down. Yeah, it's not attractive.
Exactly. So I know there are many women out there, and actually many husbands and men as well, that just love their women and want to see them happy and are happy with the way they look. And they'll tell you, honey, you know, you have nothing to worry about. You're lovely the way you are. But ultimately, it's how we feel about ourselves.
That's true.
So we are going to talk about some procedures such as labiaplasty, laser vaginal rejuvenation. These are all issues for women after having childbirth. Those procedures themselves will actually help restore some vitality to women's sex life.
Which would be very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you always need vitality there.
Well, there seems to be lots of options for men these days, so we might as well have some for women as well.
And women kind of feel like they're punished after they have babies.
That's
it's
right.
Like they've been punished. Their bodies have been punished, and then, you know, they suffer for it. So it's
right.
not as pleasurable and enjoyable for women, and so
right.
it's important.
Or that we just have to accept it, and somehow we're being selfish if we want to look at a solution for ourselves. And we're really here to say to women, we understand how they feel, we understand how women think,
mm-hmm.
and we want to offer a solution to women. And so one of the other topics that we're looking at is to do with I'm sorry, I'm losing the word now. Abdominoplasty, tummy tucks.
Yes.
You know, for the sagging skin. And that's even for women, too, that have gone out and taken real good care of themselves and lost some weight and just may not be having the aesthetic results that they were
because
hoping for.
Because the skin's not going to come back.
Exactly.
You know, when it's been overstretched.
Exactly. Uh-huh. We also offer body sculpting. For women. So, you know, there's lots of men and women out there that go to the gyms and they work really hard and they eat well. We're in a really interesting place being in Vancouver that people have access to all different sorts of activities. But ultimately, if you've worked really hard at something and you're just not getting the result you wanted to see, we do have options for that as well.
Oh, I'm really interested in body sculpting.
Mm,
that's very intriguing. I wonder what that's
all about.
Sounds interesting,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
The other procedure we're looking at talking about is a cosmetic procedure that's an advancement in cosmetic surgery, and there's a few of them. And one that we particularly want to talk about is breast augmentations through the navel.
Yeah, I was actually in my class the other night in Burnaby. I teach in Burnaby, and I was telling my students about this, and they were like, what is that? And I said, I don't know, but you'll listen to the show and you'll find out what it is, because I don't know what it is either.
Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's quite the concept of having your breasts enter your body through your tummy.
Exactly.
It's very intriguing to me.
Right.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, you know, I'm really impressed with Falls Creek Surgical Center. It's a center of excellence. They strive for excellence. You walk in there and you feel like you're in a 5-star hotel. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. The operating rooms are beautiful. They have incredible views. Of course, the patients can't enjoy the view. They shouldn't be enjoying the view in their unconscious state. But it's gorgeous out there. It must be great for the surgeons. Do you like working in there, Dr. Pacey?
It's an excellent facility.
Yeah. And you're an excellent surgeon. And so I know when you say something like that, you would not be a part of something that wasn't anything less than excellent. You have a great reputation as a physician as well. So I know it's really important. And it's good when the doctors can say, you know, we give credit to this facility by being here and practicing, you know, in this area as well. So I just want to thank you both, Dr. Pacey and Susan, for coming onto the show today and talk about varicose veins, which is a really big concern for men and women. But I know women in general are very, very aware of things like that. And I know, you know, I've got these little tiny spider veins, but I'm fortunate. But I know that there's women out there listening that are actually at this moment pregnant and have varicose vein issues. And so, you know, I think it's important for them to be able to contact Falls Creek Surgical Center and find out as pregnant women how they can resolve those issues, either waiting until after their babies are born to deal with them or resolve them, or you know, make an appointment with you, Dr. Pacey, and find out what they can do about their veins. I can't believe it. I feel sorry for these girls. You know, they're carrying these babies and the veins are popping out and they're young. They're in their 20s. They're not old, sir. Older. So say not old. But anyways, thanks so much for coming on the show today. So I encourage you to look up www.FallsCreekSurgicalCenter.com for excellent information and a virtual view. You can actually go on the website and take a virtual tour of the entire facility. And it's awesome to do that. I love your website for that. All right. And coming up on the second half of our show today, we're going to be talking with Mary and Kristen of Stepping Stones, which is a teen pregnancy organization that assists teens that are already pregnant, keeping their babies, helping them with nutrition and stuff. And that will be shortly. And so thanks to Susan for coming on today.
Thank you, Candace, for having us here.
Thanks, Dr. Pacey.
Yeah, thanks, Candace.
All right. Great. And coming up after the break, we'll be talking about teen pregnancy. This is Unlocking Secrets for Women here on CFUN.
You're listening to Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN, 1410 AM. We now return to Unlocking Secrets for Women, a program paid for and sponsored by CDN Instructional Services. This is Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN, 1410 AM.
Hi, we're back. This is Candace Newton on Unlocking Secrets for Women here on 1410 CFUN. We're here with our guest in studio, Mary and Kristen from Stepping Stones, which is a nonprofit organization for pregnant and parenting teens. Her website is www.youthbc.com, or you can find her information under our teen section at www.unlockingsecrets.com. Welcome, Marian, to Unlocking Secrets for Women.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. I want to talk to you a little bit about what inspired me to do a show on teen pregnancy. I mean, we could probably spend 2 hours talking about teen pregnancy. But for myself, I mean, I'm an older woman now, and I have had 4 beautiful kids. But I was a pregnant teenager. I had actually got pregnant for the first time when I was 17. And I had an abortion. And it was very devastating for me, and I walked the streets and couldn't look at babies, and I was devastated by this tremendous loss, didn't understand the emotional impact. And then as a way for me to try to heal that hole inside, I just got pregnant. And, you know, I mean, of course, looking now, you think, what a foolish thing to do. But when you're that emotionally empty, and you're desperate and you don't have good resources around you, you don't make wise decisions. And so I, you know, have a beautiful child out of that pregnancy, and I am grateful for that. But it was very, very tough to be a teen mom. I had some family support. My mom was, you know, pretty supportive as far as helping me out with things. But I was clueless, completely clueless. And I was 19 and clueless. And now there are girls that are getting pregnant that are much, much younger than 19. And I know as an adult, once I was married and had my kids, I was a really clueless parent. I mean, because I think parenting, there's no book that tells you how to parent, and you're not adequate at it. And I can't even imagine how challenging it is for a young person without the stability of 2 people that are involved in it together, and to try to have these children on their own, really babies having babies. So, Marian, I want to just ask you about why you, first of all, your involvement in your organization and why you started Stepping Stones.
As a single parent myself, I was having a difficult time, and I also wanted to do something with my life. And so I was looking for ideas and ways to help younger women. And so I approached Youth Unlimited with the idea of a program for pregnant and parenting teenager. And that's how it started 5 years ago. And we just wanted to offer some support in the birth room, doing birthing plans, just creating some kind of a support atmosphere to help them get through this difficult time.
And you know what's interesting to me is that you were a single mom, just went through some terrible stuff yourself, finding yourself mm-hmm. suddenly single. And how long was it from the time you found yourself single as a mom to when you started this organization?
About 2 years.
Wow. Then that was a lot of, because you had a really tiny little baby.
Yeah, she was 5 months old when I was first a single parent.
Wow. And that was very painful. And so what you did was took a bad situation and turned it into something good. You put your energy into pouring really into the life of other people. And that must have really helped you heal through your own process of being a single parent.
Yeah, it was a healing process. And also I had done a lot of counseling and stuff before that to enable me to be in a position to be able to help others.
And that's really the key, isn't it? Because you really have to go and get yourself stabilized. And it's not a question that, you know, you're crazy or anything. It's just you've been really broken and you need to get that help. It's like going to a doctor. We break a bone, we go get help.
Yeah.
we have emotional brokenness, we go get help. It's not wrong. It's very normal and a healthy choice to make. So now tell me about your organization. So how did you start? Like, obviously, you get this idea, you go to an organization, you tell them, I'd like to start this. They give you sort of a platform to make it. But how about financially? What did you do? What was required of you?
Financially, what we have to do is raise our own salary and funding for the program.
Wow.
So I just talked to people I knew, and that's how we started, was writing. We write letters to people that we know that support us on a monthly or once a couple times a year or something, they support us. And that's how it starts, and that's how we get all our funding. We apply for grants as well, but we've never had any government funding at all.
Wow. And yet we're doing such a great service for the teens out there. You are. So tell me some of the things that your organization does for these teenagers. Like, give me an age group, the range that you deal with. How young are the youngest teen moms?
The youngest girl that we've dealt with was 12, and she has kept her baby. And the oldest girl we've had in our program is 25. So we usually work from getting into the program, entering the program, it's 12 to 19. And if the girls continue on and make some good life choices and changes, they can become junior leaders, which they're planned in, or planning events and fundraising and also reaching back to the younger girls to help them along their way.
That's a very good idea, because not only does it help the younger girls with a mentor that understands, but it gives those girls that have been through it, when you give them that responsibility, you're saying to them, you know, you're doing good, you're making good choices, you're being responsible, and it gives them a sense of value so they can give back. And it really is all about giving back.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's amazing to see those junior leaders. We have 9 of them in our program right now, and to see them grow and do so much better in their life. And they have a sense of purpose, that their life isn't just a waste, that they have purpose in their life.
Wow, that's unbelievable. So how many girls do you have regularly in the program?
Probably approximately about 30 girls on a regular basis. We have about 65 girls on our actual phone list.
Wow.
And they are involved in different, some are involved a couple times a week. Others might just come out to our special events that we have.
Now, do you have a specific location that they can come to?
Yeah, we have a facility in Surrey in the Newton area.
Okay. Is it a house or?
It's more of a kind of a youth center type thing with a kitchen and a large room that we use there.
I see. So you're probably looking for something bigger.
Yes, something bigger and better is one of our visions that we have, and we'd like to see that happen in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd like to do whatever I can to help you to achieve that, because I think that's very important. Mm. So now, when a girl, how do these kids find you? Like, how do they know to come to you?
We get them from word of mouth from other teen moms, through social workers, high school counselors, nurses, some doctors. We're fairly well known in the community now since we've been there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so we get lots of referrals from other organizations and stuff as well.
So are these kids usually newly pregnant when they come to you? Or are they in an advanced stage?
It really varies. It varies. Not, we can get repeat pregnancies too often. There's girls getting pregnant within that year of having their baby, they're pregnant again.
Wow. How hard for them. How's their family support for these girls, or do they have any?
Most of them, it's little family support. Some of them have pretty good family support, but the majority that we work with and support have very little family support. Often addiction is a concern in their families abuse, yeah.
Oh, so that they don't really have a good foundation or platform to be able to springboard from.
No.
And it's not to say that, you know, girls that get pregnant always have to come from a bad environment. It doesn't always have to be that way. But when you look at them, a lot of times with teenagers, you know, if they don't have that supportive environment, then it's, you know, they're missing something inside of them, and they keep repeating behaviors, is like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. They keep sort of going through that same pathway of trying to get their needs met really inappropriately, their needs met. So now what is it? So a young girl will come to you and she's pregnant. And take me on a journey for a pregnant young girl. How does your organization help them? Give us details about, you know, they're going to come in to see you for the very first time. How does it step from there, and what's the progression?
What we try to do, we usually try to meet them in their home to get a feel of what their home environment is like. So we can kind of set in place the support systems that they need.
Do the parents allow that?
Most of the time they do. They're pretty open. Okay. And so we usually try to meet them in their home and then tell them about our program, what we do, and then ask them what areas they'd like to get involved in. And then from there, we usually invite them out to a muffin morning, which is a muffin morning. We bake muffins every Wednesday morning and then teach them life skills.
Now, are these girls, obviously, when they're first pregnant, are they still in school?
A lot of them drop out when they're pregnant. Mm. Some go to Guilford Park High School and continue their education, but a lot of them drop out.
Oh, that's terrible. That's hard for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, their life is changing and some of them are way too young to even have that. And so then they come to you for a muffin morning. So that's what I'm thinking. How can they come on a Wednesday morning if they're in school?
Mm-hmm.
But they're obviously not in school.
Yeah.
And so then what happens in the muffin mornings?
Well, there's anywhere from 6 to 12 girls that come each Wednesday, and then we cook muffins together and just kind of hang out with girls, their peers that they can relate to. And we do life skills like parenting and self-esteem and stress management and looking after a baby, pregnancy, all those type of things. And then we also let them know about the other programs that we're running, like we do evening programs as well, and just different programs throughout the week that they can get to.
That all give them skills. Mm-hmm. All these things are skill orientated.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do is build a community for them, because often they're very isolated in their situations and they feel they have no support, no love, no encouragement. So they continue in isolation, either in abusive relationships, not knowing how to get out of a situation because they don't have the skills to do it.
Mm. You know, I really hurt for our youth. I really hurt for our youth. In this day of information, this day of knowledge, this day of so much information on birth control and all those things, obviously these aren't the answers, because we're not meeting these kids' needs. There's something missing. If we've got all that information access, which is fabulous, I'm going to applaud every single organization that is out there that's trying to give good information and access to kids and help them make choices. But it's like an epidemic. We haven't solved it. There's something, and it's not to say that we'll ever completely solve it, but what's happening to our youth that these kids are still, you know, they're lonely, they're isolated, they're not feeling like they've got support. I mean, we need to support our kids. We need to be doing something here to help them. You know, I'm curious, I'm wondering what your perspective is on how these kids are still in this position. Why do you think, now I know what it was for me, and that was, you know, a good 20 plus years ago. I like to always say how old I am, but I think the whole world knows now. But when I know what it was for me back then, and society was different when I was there. There was I think the families were more together. There was divorce, but it wasn't as much as it is now. There wasn't as many single parents as there is now. I think there was a better sort of a society structure around, where sort of if you got in trouble in one place, you sort of got in trouble with everybody, and you sort of had this uniform picture that if you mess up here, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to work together to get you back on the right track. It doesn't feel like it's that anymore. And that's not to say that there's not people out there trying very hard to accomplish that. And I think our schools have been presented with a huge, huge challenge to sort of take over sometimes the parenting jobs from the families. Why do you think these young girls, what is your perspective on why these young girls are continuing to get pregnant? And 12 years old, as for a 12-year-old, is that a result of rape, or is that a result of just being in a relationship at a very young age?
Being in a relationship at a young age in this situation.
So what would a 12-year-old be so missing in their life that they think they could try to find that with a boy?
I believe it's connectedness and the desire to be loved and belong.
Wow.
and just be with someone that cares for them. And it's a false sense of love, because it doesn't fill that space in their life, and it just creates a bigger hole that they're searching for.
Wow, that's unbelievable. How incredibly sad for these young girls to have to look for that empty sort of feeling inside their own hearts. I mean, that is so, that's sad. That breaks my heart to know that they're feeling that way. I mean, we know as adult women, when we go through adult rejection, because if you've been a single, well, you know, as a single woman, if your husband or your partner has left you and you're left alone with children, there is that devastation of incredible sense of loss as a woman. You feel rejected. I can't imagine trying to cope with that being a young child. And, you know, we've got to find a way to help these kids. We've got to do something to start to help our teens. And that breaks my heart. I think what we'll do is we're just going to take a break right now. And we'll come up after the break and we'll talk a little bit more about what sort of gets our teens involved in that, and maybe what we as parents could do to try to help sort of, because I think parents out there, I mean, they love their children. They don't want their kids in this place. And it's not that they're being negligent so much as, you know, sometimes they're not aware of what their kids are needing. And so coming up after the break, we're going to continue this very, very passionate topic on teen pregnancy here on Unlocking Secrets for Women.
You're listening to Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN, 1410 AM.
Now, back to Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN, 1410 AM.
Hi, this is Candace Newton, and we're back here on Unlocking Secrets for Women with our guest, Marian Kristen from Stepping Stones, which is a nonprofit organization for pregnant and parenting teens. And we had a caller just call a few minutes ago asking us about adoption and how many of these girls, you know, choose adoption as an alternative for them. Marian, can you address that? What is the percentage of adoption from your perspective and the amount of girls that you've been involved with?
We've been doing this in 5 years, and the girls that we've seen was probably about over 100 girls in this time period, and we've never had any adoptions. And it's not in lack of trying to encourage them to adopt their baby out. It's just, I think our culture, there's kind of a stigmatism in our culture about adoption that it's a negative thing, and we try to take it from more of a positive perspective, but often they don't even want to discuss it. They just don't want to discuss it.
And you know what? I wonder if it's because, now if I look back at myself, and I think I wanted to have this baby to fill a void in my life, then am I going to give up that very thing I went through because I still perceive it as something that's going to fill a void in my life? And the baby really isn't. I'm not looking at this baby as this is a baby and a child that I want to nurture and bring into the world and make them a great citizen and contribute to the world. It's I need this child in my life to help fill a void. So that would, of course, there'd be a reluctance to want to give the baby up because it's meeting sort of an unhealthy need.
Yeah, and choosing to give your baby up for adoption is very self-sacrificing.
Yeah.
And it's a 9-month period where when you're a teenager, 9 months is like 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's too self-sacrificing. Often a lot of them do not want to do that. It's a big thing.
Well, it's an emotional ripping apart.
It is.
It's just tearing. It's like putting two pieces of paper together with glue and then try to tear them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And if these kids don't have the emotional ability to say no to a sexual relationship that's going to involve pregnancy, they're not going to find the ability to say no to giving up that child. Yeah. And that's really tough. And I'm sure there are teens out there that, you know, would consider adoption, I suppose, or open adoption. But I would think that those are the kids that sort of did have a pretty good sense of self-esteem, and it was more like, you know, they had good family support and all that. It was more like one of those unexpected things that happened, and, you know, and I know we've heard of it, but not a lot. And, yeah, it's very interesting that the caller would ask that question. It's a very good question, and thank you for bringing that up to us. Yeah, so, you know, we're looking at what can we do for our kids. I know as a mother with daughters, I mean, I look and I see what they need emotionally, and I need to help them, first of all, learn to love themselves and to have self-respect. And I do that by first, I need to love me. I can't give them something I don't have, and I have to learn to model that for myself. Do you feel that way with these girls? Do they talk about what they need? Do they talk about their moms? Do they talk about the emptiness that they have?
They often open up once we get to know them, once the trust is established in with them. And there's a big emptiness there, often a big void of parental love and support.
And I'm sure these parents don't mean to do this to their kids, because I don't think there's a parent that wakes up in the morning and says, I want to hurt my child.
No.
It's a lack of skill. It's a lack of understanding. And maybe some of those parents were young teen parents themselves that never learned.
Yeah, it is often a generational cycle.
Is it?
Yeah, and I like you said, parents don't want to hurt their kids, but often they have so many of their own issues that they haven't dealt with. They just continue to be very self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to raise children when you're self-focused.
It is. And you know, when you're, and you don't mean to be self-focused, but when you're so empty inside yourself as an adult and you haven't learned it, you know, how to sustain yourself emotionally, it ends up the same way. You know, I can even think of kids, you know, children are very, they look at the world from a very introspective point of view. Everything is relative to them. And I even know, I mean, every mother out there can relate to this. You're having a bad day, you know, for whatever reason, you're grumpy. And that little child looks at the expression of your face and they don't have the insight to understand all that's happened in that day. And all they can say is, Mommy, are you mad at me? It's all about them at that moment.
Yeah.
And so they can't interpret it accurately. And so if you as an adult parent don't have that ability to discern that that's how your child's reading it, that kid's going to continue to believe that it's all about them. And then they're going to feel like their world is empty. And then they're going to continue to seek out what you say, companionship, a sense of love, a sense of connectedness to another human being. I've talked about this before, that way back in the 50s, and I'm probably going to get corrected for this because I don't have all my information accurate, but I do believe there was an experiment done where there were some children in an orphanage, and I think in France. Oh boy, I'm going to get corrected for this,
right.
I betcha. Am I right?
Yeah.
And they had some children that were nurtured and held and loved and touched and others that weren't. And there was a high death rate amongst the babies that were not comforted.
Yeah.
And all of us as human beings, male, female, doesn't matter what age we are, we have a core need to be loved inside. We can live with just about anything except that need to be loved. And you strip back every human being and you see that's the core and essence of why we do everything. We don't want to be rejected. We want to be accepted. We make dumb choices because we're so afraid of not getting that acceptance and that love. How can we help these girls? What do you find? The girls that don't repeat behaviors, that don't repeat pregnancies, what makes the difference between them and the girls that are repeating in pregnancies? Have you analyzed that or seen?
Yeah, I think when the girls have the ability to receive what we have to offer them, and they're willing to make the changes that they need, and they're willing to receive the love and the support we have to offer them, and they want to make their life better. And some girls just continue down that path of self-destructive choices, and that's just where they are at that time, and there's nothing we can really do at that point except for to be there when they want to, you know, straighten out their life.
And don't you think that when you, because we talked about this on the way in, we were talking about feeling and that ability to feel. A lot of times, you know, if we can't feel when our fingers touch a hot stove, obviously we're going to do damage to ourselves. And that capacity to feel is very important. And when you're young and you're in a situation where your feelings are either suppressed because no one will let you talk about the things that you feel, or you're being abused, or something's happening so that those feelings are suppressed, it's like the cycle. You stop feeling. And then you can have all kinds of destructive things happen to you, and you can't feel what's happening, and you continue in these behaviors. And it's, I guess, at some point, these girls or anyone that's hurting has to get to the place where the pain of their circumstances and their choices becomes greater than the loss that they think they're going to have. Somehow the pain has to get more intense for them, or they just have to say, this is so empty. There has to be more. There's got to be something else. And I guess all you can do with those girls is just continue to support them. How frustrating it is for you to see these girls after, you know, you've helped them through their first year of pregnancy, and then just to find out that they're pregnant again.
Yeah, it's extremely frustrating, and it, because it's so damaging to them. And often they feel they have no choices, that they don't know where to go, and they're still searching for that love in all the wrong places.
Are they aware when they come to when they come back and say to you, "I'm pregnant again"? How do they come back? Like, are they sort of resigned to it? Are they devastated by it? Or what is their struggle?
It really varies from girl to girl. Some are excited that they're pregnant. Some are
again.
Yeah. Some are very scared. Because they know what it's like now. They've been through the labor. They've been through parenting and been through sleepless nights and everything else. So they know the reality of it. The first time, you're kind of like, it's like, oh, it'll be good and it'll be all about love and all this good stuff. But then the reality sets in, and parenting is a really tough job.
It's horrible. It's horrible for adult people that have waited to have children and decide to, you know, it's not that parenting in itself is bad, but the responsibility is massive. Now, these are young girls. I mean, they can't work. They're not going to school. How are they being supported?
Through the welfare system.
Wow.
Mainly. And because it's a very small amount and getting reduced all the time, we do try to support them with diapers, formula, some food, support them with clothes. We always have clothes donated to us and household items that are donated to us, and we just provide them on muffin mornings and our other evening programs.
Now, how are you getting your diapers and your formula?
Through fundraising our own money for our program, and then we just purchase most of the diapers and the formula, and we've also had some donated.
Wow. So what we really need to find out there is an organization, a company that manufactures diapers and manufactures formula that's willing to donate a percentage of, you know, what they have to your organization. That would really help you guys, because otherwise those funds are being spent on formula and diapers, and you're not able to give to the girls as much as you'd like to, or maybe the babies are helping out as much. So that's something, if you're out there and you're listening and you have any influence in that area, it would be fantastic if you're an organization, a factory, manufacturer, or a major company that wants to help to provide those practical things for these girls. Now, you were telling me that you have a dream. What is the dream that you'd like to have?
I have a dream of having a larger center where it would be like a house type setting, where we'd be able to have emergency bedrooms, a daycare on site, a donation store, a large living room, kitchen, a place where they can come and do their laundry, a place where they can finish their grade 12 and get pre and postnatal care, like a little medical room. They kind of have a kind of one-stop place for so that they can get just a lot of support. And yeah, that's kind of one of my dreams. And I really believe it's going to happen because there's a lot of things coming together and it's just a matter of time.
And so what kind of support do you need to have to accomplish that? What kind of organizations or people that may be listening right now that say, I can do something to help? Like, what do you think people could do?
Just people who have knowledge about the Surrey area as far as permits and building facilities that would be available, financial resources, just anything like that, that would be able to come alongside us and work together as a team and make this dream possible for these young moms.
And to be and to enable these girls to be in a home setting and to be able to get their education too, to me sounds like that's the best chance that they've got if we can continue with an education for them.
Yeah.
You know, because education, obviously it's important for what they need in life, but it also builds their sense of, hey, I can accomplish something. I have done something productive, even though I've had this tough challenge in front of me. And I think that's very important too. So are you working together to help them get that going right now? Is there anything going
on? Now, that's not happening. We do encourage them to get training, and we've had some of our girls that are working full-time now because of the support that they've gotten from us and referrals we've made to other organizations with them. And there are girls that are just doing amazing now.
Oh, wow. And I bet they have awesome stories, and that's probably why they're great leaders that can turn around and help. I know people look at me and say they cannot believe my past, but if you get the right kind of support and help, then you know, you can change things. I can remember I was, when I was 19 and I realized I didn't know how to parent, boy, I'll tell you, I phoned social services at the time, and they had a family care worker that they sent to my home to teach me. And this family care worker came to my home, taught me how to discipline, taught me how to feed my baby, and gave me one-to-one support and care. Now, obviously, that can't happen the same way anymore, but it did make a difference with me. It made such a huge difference. Mary and I can't thank you enough for coming in today and talking about this really, really important topic. It breaks my heart to know that there's girls out there that aren't getting the support that they need. We think about the young boys, too, that have become daddies at such a young age and can't even, you know, as growing up as men, can't feel their sense of responsibility and how difficult that must be for them, too, because we can't exclude them. They're a partner in this.
Yeah, we're in the process of starting up a dad's program. We just have about five men lined up waiting to mentor some younger men.
And that's very important. Well, it's been an incredible conversation today, and this is such a needed area. For those of you who'd like to donate to Stepping Stones, their website is www.youthbc.com. There's a good website out there, and it's a fabulous organization. I commend you for what you're doing. I commend you for not sort of going into the woe is me, but pulling something out of yourself to go out there and help other people, because that's the best healing, is when you help others, you heal yourself. Next week, coming up on the show, we're very excited. We have got Sandra Stevenson from Sport BC. She's the president of Sport BC, and Brock Turner, the manager of media for Sport BC. Sport BC is kids sports. They provide all the insurances for all the sports in British Columbia. They're a fantastic organization. And then, in addition to that, the second half of the show, we have Louis Pisaglia, Hall of Famer, Bob Leonarduzzi, and Coach Wally Bueno coming in to talk about high-performance athletes and sports, how important it is for kids to be involved in sports, their attitude and perspective towards us as a host city for the Olympics. And we're just thrilled, absolutely thrilled to have them here. And I do believe we'll see a little spot with them on City TV next Friday afternoon. So you'll keep looking out for your sports news to see them on there, and you'll see them in studio here with me. It was fun being in here with all this testosterone. They said, you know, Candace, you're in here with a bunch of Italians. I'm like,